Hey, happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, probably the lesser of the two important people on this show.
That
I'm with
true.
Beth Guckenberger.
We have to do a show on self-esteem now, just for you. Let me explain to you what happens when someone has a bad self-esteem.
Oh, hilarious.
They're just, you know.
All I have to do is tee you up. All right, so this is
This is
Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob, that's Beth.
Yes, and yes. I'm like awful.
I've had,
you know, jet lag and sleep deprivation and too much caffeine, and I'm very excited to be with you this morning.
Just got back from Haiti.
I love that place.
Yeah?
I love it. I am in a great chorus of people who love Haiti. There are many, many people in the United States who've had the chance to visit there, serve there, minister there. So it's not like I'm unique to that, but it is. There's something about that island that just gets in you, and then, man, you're hooked.
I gotta confess, it's just a conundrum to me.
Right.
I would love to be there. I'd love to go there. I've never been. One of these days you're gonna invite me to go or something. I don't know what it is, but I mean, everybody I hear who goes says I love Haiti. I love the people there, but it's a wreck. I mean, it's been a wreck forever. So sometimes there's this part of me. I mean, trust me, it's not the good part of me.
Okay.
The other part of me says,
I love when you expose the bad part of me.
Yeah, the bad part of me is like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's fruitless.
Oh.
Because the government steals from you. You know, all those nasty.
I'm so glad you are not in charge of the universe.
That's what I'm saying. This is the bad part of me.
Okay.
That gives me all these excuses not to go because of that. But then there's this other part of me just says, it's all about people. It's all about meeting the individual people.
That's right.
And you fall in love with them. So I have this conundrum.
Well, I'd like to unlock that conundrum for
you.
Yes,
okay.
Let's just skip the first segment. And let's just be Dr. Rob, lay down on my couch.
We're not going to skip the first segment. But anyway, the people that I talk to, I'm not the only one. People I talk to are cynical about Haiti because they think it's just an empty bucket with a hole in the bottom where people just pour resources that never do anything. And so I try to have the conversation that it's about orphans there. It's about widows there. It's about, you know, people trying to do the right thing. It's not about this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the conundrum that I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're starting to move over to the light side from the
dark
side. I would say that it has the densest population of NGOs of anywhere in the world. And it's third from the bottom.
NGOs for our
non-government organizations.
Yeah, so it has the most non-government agencies trying to help people.
Yes, than anywhere in the world. And it's third from the bottom on 196 countries in the Hunger Index. So it's in almost the worst situation and receiving almost the most help. So
yes.
In all fairness, I understand your conundrum.
Thank you.
But I do think that... it's a perfect storm. There's all kinds of things that are going on there.
Sure.
And, you know, people have written lots of books about the whole thing. But at the end of the day, you got to do for one what you could wish you'd do for them all.
That's exactly right.
And get involved in life. So anyway.
That's the good part of me.
I did that. And I just like them. I like everything about it. I even think it's funny. They laugh at my name all the time.
Well.
Because my name, if you say it in French, which is, you know, they speak Creole. They're French Creole, of course. Beth, I can't say TH, it comes out like an F. So say Beth with an F sound.
Beth.
Which is French for cow or beef. And so every time I introduce myself, the kids are always like, make her say it again. What's your name? Her name is Cow. I love it. So, you know, that's really good for the self-esteem. But they are always asking me to say my name. It's kind of fun.
There you go. That's reason enough to travel with you right there.
No, just to hear that. Yeah. Okay. And
well, I'm glad you're back safely.
Thank you. And it's almost Thanksgiving.
It is.
So your son's coming home from college.
He is coming home from college, yes.
Oh, that's really fun.
He's a freshman.
I love that. And he's going to come home and bring his dirty laundry.
He's been home a couple of times. He's just a couple hours away. We're in Cincinnati, and he's in Lexington at the University of Kentucky.
Yeah.
So he's been home a couple of times, and yes, he brings home his laundry.
So with a newly minted college student.
Yes.
Do you have the same rules in your house, like same curfew, same, or
no.
Is he like allowed to do whatever he wants?
He's not allowed to do whatever he wants, but you know, he's a college kid. So whereas before in high school he had a curfew,
yeah.
Now we're like, we'd just like for you to communicate to us when you anticipate you'll be home, so he can be home whenever he wants. We obviously reinforce the idea that nothing really good happens after midnight,
amen,
so
brother.
you can stay out later if you want, but honestly. There really isn't anything great happening. But if you're watching a movie and you're going to be home at 1 or whatever, just text us and let us know. So we're less rigid on those kind of things. He's an 18-year-old young man, and lucky for us, I guess, or something, he's a great kid.
He's
so
a good boy. I remember when I first came home the first weekend from college on Thanksgiving weekend, I brought a bunch of people home that lived too far away to go to their own houses. They were waiting for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So I remember I borrowed my parents' car, and we went out that evening. And I remember we did get home after midnight because my parents were sleeping. And I pulled into the driveway, and I forgot to put the car in park.
Oh, geez.
But I turned it off. But I forgot to put the car in park, and everybody gets out of the car, and it
starts
just
rolling.
Slowly rolls into the garage, which the door was shut, but I didn't really know what to do. And then it was a Volvo, so they're like little tanks, and so it pushed the whole garage off out of the cement wall, and then all of a sudden the wall's like tilted, and there was like it was terrible sound. So I pulled up the the emergency brake, and I ran upstairs and woke up my dad, and I'm like, Dad, did you hear that noise? Which is not a good way to wake up your dad, you know, after midnight. Like, what noise are we talking about? The noise of the garage door coming out of the...
What's even better about that story is having driven with you and ridden in cars with you and in at least two different countries, it's good to know that that your current driving is a result of the way you drove when you were 16 or 18 or whatever.
From the very beginning.
Holy moly.
I just forgot to
put it in park.
Well, never again. See, you only have to learn those lessons once. May I be your cautionary tale, and may you, listener, always put your car in park in the driveway.
You know what's interesting to me, you brought up the college thing, is, you know, I used to get care packages when I was in college and all that kind of stuff.
From girls?
No.
From mothers?
From my mom.
Oh, I love that.
Did boys send you care packages when you were in college?
I didn't mean to say that.
Come
actually,
on. That's another show we're going to have to talk about. Maybe we'll have to talk off air first. But no, I didn't get any care packages from girls.
Did you get oysters with wild rice?
No, that was last week.
Okay,
no.
Sorry.
No, but it seems like now it's like there's a care package industry.
Ooh.
You know, it's like, you know, if you're not getting the care package like once a week, something's wrong. You know, I like got a care package once a quarter or something like that.
Oh.
But it's like, oh, yeah, you know, send this and send that.
I know. Poor college kid who's not getting care packages. And they're like, roommates are opening up.
Right.
Sweet things all the time. Maybe we should all endeavor to send care packages to people that are in our lives that aren't our children. That'd be kind of a nice thing.
Well,
that
could be all right. That could be all right. Charlie Ashley asked for some weird things in a care package. So, and it's weird because it was like this connection to home that we didn't really even knew that he thought was an important thing. So he wanted pumpkin seeds.
Okay.
Because we make pumpkin seeds at home and nobody ever eats them. It's just one of those things and then you just end up throwing away. But he's like, I want a care package with pumpkin seeds.
Okay.
And we have a friend who makes like venison jerky.
And he wanted that.
I'm like, dude, what are you...
That's so fun.
Anyway,
he's feeling nostalgic or reminiscent.
I guess. I didn't know that he liked either of those things.
I think that's all the more reason we should have things like that in our lives so that when our kids leave us, they miss us.
It is true. We have a lot of sort of those mini traditions or whatever that you think they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden my son's away at college and he's like, and he comes home. We're like, can we do this? Can we do that? Can we have family movie night? We're like, dude, we used to have to like beg you to do these things, and now he's asking to do them.
That's
so
fun and possible.
It's kind of interesting.
I do like that.
Hey, we've got an interesting show today. Speaking of interesting,
yes,
and you know, this next segment, Related by Chance, Family by Choice, by Deb D'Armand, is this thing about mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. So I'm going to be
she's a brave soul, but
she's written a book.
I know.
About what it's like to hang out with mother-in-laws. I mean.
Brave soul.
Brave.
I remember one time an editor said, don't write a story about your kid, about being a parent, unless you're ready to have your theories tested. Don't write a story about marriage unless you're willing to go to counseling afterwards.
Yes.
I'm thinking, you write a story about your mother-in-law, it could get hard.
And then in the second, after the bottom of the hour, Dr. Linda Soley is going to be with him. Take charge of your emotions. 7 steps to overcoming depression, anxiety, and anger. Which could be related to mother-in-laws.
I think this is all very timely. And holidays.
So you want to stick around for those. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back in just 60 seconds.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with Back-to-Back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back2Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back2Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We were just having a little chuckle off the air about the topic we're about to dive into head first, and that is mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, mother-in-law stuff. And as we said before the break, you got to be pretty gutsy to write a book about the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship.
And I'm not sure I've ever heard of a book about the mother-in-law.
Yeah, that's the cool thing.
So
that's exactly right.
She's an industry leader already.
That's right. We're breaking ground right now. And Deb, I've said many times on the show that I'm gifted at being able to butcher people's names. So Deb D'Armond, how did I do?
It's close. It's D'Armond with a
D'Armond. All right. Well, I'm glad.
D'Armond.
Yes, you're the latest in a long list of people. So I apologize ahead of time. But thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm excited having the chance to talk with you.
Great.
Deb, tell us a little bit about kind of the catalyst for your story and what prompted you to put some of the things, your best practices, in a book form for the rest of us.
Well, Beth, for years I had heard the old adage, a son's a son till he takes a wife, but a daughter's a daughter all of her life. I had three boys, no girls. That really wasn't going to work for me. And I could see the handwriting on the wall. I was a daughter-in-law, lots of friends who were daughters-in-law, and there is sort of a natural gravitation towards the wife's family in most relationships. Maybe mom and daughter are just closer and there's a stronger bond or connection. But I began to really realize that somewhere down the line, I was going to have some heartache if I didn't begin really constructively thinking about it pretty early. And when my boys began to show up on the scene, I think I really came to that awareness with my first son. I really actively began to seek the Lord about, how is this equitable, Lord? How is this fair? And He really gave my husband and I think, some, not secrets, because they're certainly there in the Word, but He gave us some insight about how to prepare to have those relationships be just as good as they can possibly be.
Now, I know that, I mean, we've talked a lot on the show about marriage and lots of relationships, and a lot of times our experiences, you know, help drive what happens later in life. So I'm going to step out on a limb and say, well, did you learn a lot of great things from your own relationship with your mother-in-law, and how did those translate to having daughter-in-laws?
You know, I married an only son. That's always a potential,
yes,
snare.
Beth's face just dropped. She's like, oh, boy.
And I think she vetted me a lot more carefully than she did the young man who married her daughters.
Yes.
But, you know, I asked her about that years later, and she said, I knew my son was going to need to lead a family, and that was only going to be possible if he had the support and agreement of a godly wife. My girls were going to join families already in progress. And she said it was a different level of responsibility for him. And I really wanted to make sure that this was someone who was going to support him in that godly goal. So I will tell you that there were times I felt a little under the microscope in the early years, but I really came to appreciate that she was not looking to correct or to advise or to criticize, but to pray. And because I was born late in life to my parents and I lost my mother when I was only in my early 40s, I think God knew I'd need a backup mom. Mm-hmm. I'm so close to her and so grateful for her presence in my life. She's been a real godly example for me.
Do you, I mean, I'm just curious about your insight, how you started out a little bit earlier, that the Lord gave you some insight in Scripture.
Yeah.
And I'm curious also, as our listeners are thinking about their own families and about what your daughters-in-law's relationship is like with each other, because I think that's probably part of that recipe of having a healthy...
I couldn't agree with you more, Beth. I think the early insights that the Lord was so merciful to hand off to a mother of three sons was the awareness that they were mine to raise, but never to keep. And that I was really helping to prepare them for the woman who would eventually become the most important woman in their lives. It's not supposed to be mom. It's supposed to be wife. And so as we prayed over those little boys, when they were tiny, when they were toddlers, when they were teens, Lord, today protect the young woman who will someday be my daughter-in-law. Help raise her up with godly examples. Guard her heart and let my son, please, be smart enough to know her when he sees her. Mm-hmm. And when you've prayed that routinely, well, then when she shows up, it's not a, oh, no, here she comes. It's a, oh, thank you, Lord, for answering my prayers. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't just praying for her. Every time we prayed that prayer, it was a reminder that when God, you know, created a woman to put in the garden with Adam, it wasn't his mother, it was a wife, mm-hmm. and that was his plan. And if I wanted to be in line with his word, that had to be my plan.
You know, I love one thing I love about the book is that in addition to the insights that you give, they're actually driven by surveys that you gave. So you were getting information from other people and trying to weave that into a story, not just about your experience, but the experiences of many people. What did you learn from those surveys? Did anything surprise you when you heard back from people from the surveys?
Well, I think that sort of intuitively, I believed that there wasn't much difference between mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law in the church than with those who had no faith affiliation. And unfortunately, our numbers absolutely confirmed that. It's almost as though the, you know, love one another has an asterisk in some Bibles at the bottom that says, accept your woman-in-law. And I have to tell you that the daughter-in-law is almost as often the issue as the mother-in-law is. You know, mother-in-laws need better press. They get they get Jane Fonda as monster-in-law and Marie Barone on Everybody Loves Raymond. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, because of that stereotype that's been so prevalent, I think young women come in loaded for bear. They're ready for it to be a fight. They kind of mark their territory early. And truthfully, mama may have tenure, but daughters-in-law have some, well, let's just say benefits that mama can't really compete with at the end of the day.
Yes.
So I think that young women sometimes come in expecting it to be bad, and when it is, they're not surprised. Mm-hmm. And they commiserate, they don't communicate, and it just sort of continues to grow.
Mm.
And what role can a son play in that relationship, strengths or weaknesses between the mother and the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law?
Well, I think that the man in the middle sometimes is just trying to stay off the radar, Beth, and he occasionally will choose what I think is a really detrimental way to do that. He'll play both ends against the middle. He'll say privately to his mother, I know that my wife is difficult. I know that she can be sarcastic and kind of snappish, and I'm so sorry, Mom. You know, I've talked to her about it. But he's saying the same thing to his wife about his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of them believe that they have his ear. And he would be much better served, and so would the relationships, if he just created an expectation that said, look, I love you both. I don't want to have a separation or division in the family, and I'm going to ask you to work this out. And the thing that he probably has not done, that he'd be really well served to do, is step out and encourage them to talk to one another.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a timely show we're having here. You know, Thanksgiving right around the corner, Christmas, New Year's, all those major family holidays when people who don't normally react on a daily basis are together. What have you learned, or what might you pass on to people who are kind of like, oh my gosh, here it comes, what do I do?
Well, Rob, truthfully, I think my husband and I looked at the playing field and thought, oh, if we try to compete with those girls' mothers, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
So let's not do that. We very early on set some precedences, and that is that our first daughter-in-law has a very small family. We invited them to to join us for holidays. And that worked really well. We've been guests in the homes of our son's in-laws, and they've included the entire family, not just that group. But the thing that we hit on that has really worked for us is typically we'll spend the 26th of December through the 30th of January together. What we've discovered is that the pressure and the hoopla of the holidays has passed, and we really are able to just kind of take that long breather and enjoy our time. We'll sometimes gather in our home here in Texas. We've gone up to the mountains and rented a cabin, and people have skied and snowboarded and just really had the pleasure of hanging out together. And that has worked for us. So my best tip is be flexible. It's not Burger King. You can't have it your way every year. And there have been times when my sons have said, Mom, this year we're flying to California to be with Sarah's family. Are you going to be okay with that? You bet, because I have you the other 364 weeks out of the year. I'm so blessed that I'm going to encourage you to go.
And it sounds like there's something tied to the sort of the pressure of the actual day or the actual celebration, that if you do it just before, or maybe even better, just after, all that's gone away, and you can really just enjoy the relationship.
Well, you know, Rob, one year we did it a whole week early because all three of my kids, whose in-laws live in California, decided that year they were going west. And so we decided we'd do it the week before, and we did it exactly as we would have if it was Christmas morning. The funny thing is that we're sitting there opening gifts, and I heard the trash man coming down the street, and I said to the group, since when do they collect trash on Christmas? And somebody
You've
looked
forgotten.
At me and said, Mom, it's really the 18th. It's like, yeah. But you can create that on any day of the year.
Yeah.
What did your daughter-in-laws think when you told them you were going to write a book about, you know, your relationship with them and your insight that for others?
Well, do you know, it was kind of a conversation. I didn't make a decision. The girls and I both have experienced, Beth, over the years, people saying, how do you all do this? How do you do life together and it genuinely works? And you're very different in personality and style and experience and all those things. How do you do it? And two of the girls and I were at a retreat when a woman leaned across the table and said, I want to know your secret. And I looked up. I didn't know her, and I thought, I wasn't even sure she was talking to me. And my expression and my silence prompted her to say, I want to know your secret. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not following you. She said, I'm sharing a cabin with your two daughters-in-law, and they don't like you. They're crazy about you, and I want to know how you did that. And that really started a conversation between the girls and I. And we began to sort out, well, what is it that we do? And out of that, the Lord just created a book. The girls were very involved. The book's not autobiographical, although it has bits of our story in it. We wanted to find out, what's the experience like across the board in the church and out of the church?
Yeah.
They participated in helping to lead focus groups. And my daughter-in-law, Penny, who's a very gifted writer, she voiced chapter 5, which is from the daughters-in-law to the mothers-in-law, with all of the collected experiences in her two sisters-in-law, sort of helping her to create that. So it was very much a joint venture. And that's, I think, what makes this book kind of unique, because frankly, there's a lot of mother-in-law books written by daughters-in-law who are complaining and the other way around. This was really about not what should you do, because we know what the word asks of us. It's really a, how do you do that?
Right. Deb, in the minute we got left, how do people find the book? As I said, it's very timely, and so how can they get their hands on it?
Well, it's on all the popular outlets. It's at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and ChristianBooks.com. They can contact me at my website at DebDearman.com, and we can point them in the right direction.
Great. Related by chance, family by choice. Deb, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Rob. Thanks, Beth. Have a great afternoon.
All right. You blessings too. To you. Yeah, great. I mean, again, not a book that a lot of stuff is written about, but an important relationship. Holy cow.
I mean, one that, yes, it faced with on a very regular basis.
Yep. Hey, don't go away. Take charge of your emotions. Dr. Linda Soley is going to be with us. 7 Steps to Overcome Depression, Anxiety, and Anger. She's next up, and we will see you right after the break.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. Hope you're having a great Saturday wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. And we're having a great Saturday.
I think we are having a fantastic Saturday.
Absolutely. Some great discussion going on, and it's going to continue right now.
Okay, let's hear it.
Dr. Linda Soli is with us, and she has written a book, Take Charge of Your Emotions, 7 Steps to Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger. And she's a licensed psychologist, got a PhD at the University of Minnesota. She's been helping clients overcome emotional challenges and specializing in issues of depression and anxiety for nearly 30 years. She began her practice as a hospital staff psychologist working with children and adults and has been in private practice for more than 2 decades. She's a member of the APA. She speaks a ton. She's written a great book. And somehow or another, we got her on our show.
I'm very excited.
How did that happen? I mean, that's, we get great guests, and this is another one. So, Doctor, thanks for being with us so much.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Absolutely.
Explain to our listeners a little bit about the kinds of scenarios that you were seeing in private practice that prompted you to put a book out like this for us to read at the lay level.
Well, what really prompted me to write this book was that I repeatedly saw people who thought that they could not take charge of their emotions, that they felt like they were a victim of their genetics or their brain chemistry, and that they were really at the mercy of their emotions. And from my study on the brain, I realize, as so many people are learning about the brain today, that we really can affect our brain functioning by the way we think and the way we behave. So I wrote this book because I wanted to empower people to learn to independently take charge of their emotions and find relief from emotional pain.
Hmm. And you talk about one of these, you teach people to take charge of their emotions using three types of relationships. And as I was looking through the book, can you tell us what those relationships are?
Yes. The first relationship is the relationship between thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And we're discovering that physiologically, our thinking, how we interpret life around us, directly creates so many of our emotions. And so the first relationship that I look at is how to take charge of our thinking to find emotional and behavioral relief. And the second relationship that I look at is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And St. Paul obviously understood the importance of having Christ guide our thinking when he said, "Take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ." And the longer I've practiced psychology, the more I've discovered practical benefits to mental health of having Christ be the guide of our thoughts and behaviors. So the second section of the book looks at practical benefits of the Christian faith to mental health. And then the third type of relationship that I examine in the book is the relationship with people, starting with a relationship with yourself and then relationships with other people. We were created as social beings. And I tie all of these relationships together, then the relationship between thoughts, behaviors, and feelings, a relationship with Jesus Christ, and relationships with people in the last section of the book to look at overcoming depression, anxiety, anger, and ultimately to find joy. And it's all really practical, commonsensical mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm. The first of the Ten Commandments says that I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods before me. In your book, you kind of explore this idea of this commandment and how it relates to mental health. Will you unpack that for our listeners?
Yes. That first commandment is not God being egotistical, saying, "I want to be front and center in your life," which he does want to be front and center in our life, but it is for our own good. And through these years of counseling people, I have seen that it's so natural for us to cling on to earthly things for security. We can cling on to family members. I've worked with people who've been really frightened at the thought of losing a family member, which is completely normal. We love the people in our family, and we love our friends, but sometimes we can put our hope in living in earthly things, including people, and people can become very frightened and panicked at the thought of losing the fragile things of this earth. Our confidence can be in people, in money, in our career, in our reputation. Any of these things can be taken away from us, and we will, like I said, desperately cling on to them if we make them our God. Mm. And so choosing to consciously not make them our God liberates us from that anxiety and gives us a solid basis for mental health. And it's kind of a daily battle when we find ourselves becoming anxious about this or that in our life, thinking, "Oh, I'm afraid that I might lose my job," or "I'm concerned about my money, I might not have enough money," to constantly remind ourselves, "I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me, my confidence in living is in Christ alone."
Mm. Yeah.
One of the things that you write about is this idea that we have a sense of satisfaction about ourselves and about our life, and Rob and I were having a discussion a couple weeks ago about the idea of being bored or having boredom, and I was saying that I just take issue with that word, which is it's a personal thing. It doesn't have to be part of our discussion.
I'm with you.
Okay. Well, it doesn't have to be part of the discussion, but I was just saying to him that I think that there is a sense of contentment that should be the expectation of the Christ follower to a certain extent. And if you find yourself discontent or bored, that it can become destructive as we seek to fill that need of entertainment, which that was one moment of a soapbox. But I'm curious if you about what you found about developing a satisfying relationship with ourselves.
I actually did my doctoral dissertation research on learning how to be alone and not be lonely. And the chapter on developing a satisfying relationship with yourself and also the chapter on developing more satisfying relationships with others come directly out of that research, which I found significantly reduced loneliness compared to a control group. And there are so many things that we can do to have a satisfying relationship with ourselves. And like I said, I've tested these ideas that I wrote about in the book. And one of them, even where you're talking about boredom, we can choose to have a curious mind. No matter what our situation is, there are so many things to learn about and so many ways in which we can be used by God. I also talk in the book about having meaning and purpose in life no matter what our situation. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting adventure to see what Christ will put in our path when we choose him for our purpose and then choosing to be interested in life and engaging in life. And so we do not have to be bored. I'm with you on that. And I also might say that with these 7 steps for overcoming depression, anxiety, and anger, I didn't sit down to make them up. They just naturally evolved out of the counseling sessions that I've had with people. And I found that people would say, like, I feel bored, and they would say, there's no self-talk connected to that. Or I just feel down on Sunday nights, and they would insist there was no self-talk connected to that, that their thinking wasn't connected to it. And I had a feelings list in my desk drawer. I started out as a high school English teacher, and I would give my clients and still do a lot of handouts. Mm-hmm. And I pulled out this feelings list, and I would have people look at the feelings list to pick specifically, on Sunday nights when you're feeling down, how exactly do you feel? And they might say then that they felt bored or they felt full of dread or they felt lonely. That would guide them more precisely to their thinking that might be lurking around in their subconscious that is causing them to then be pretty passive or whatever and not actively engage in life. So the feelings list and identifying precisely what people think helps them get a handle on their thoughts, which they can directly control and learn to change unhelpful ways of thinking and choose more helpful, believable, truthful interpretations of life, which will give them emotional relief and help them be more actively engaged in life in the case of boredom or passivity.
Mm. We've got a couple minutes before we need to take a break. Are you able to stick with us after the break?
I'd love to.
Oh, that would be great. Before that, I you know, the power of positive thinking, that's kind of a common vernacular in our culture, and it's a great book, all those kind of things. But you talk about the power of helpful thinking. And
yes.
in before the break, can you give us at least a beginning thought about what the difference of those things are?
Positive thinking isn't necessarily true all the time. A common example I use is if a person is having company over for dinner and they feel insecure about that, if they tell themselves, I know my meal will turn out just wonderfully, it will be just delicious, that would not necessarily help that person feel more confident because no one has such a guarantee. Mm. Helpful thinking is entirely true and believable, and that therefore has an impact, a strong impact on how we feel and how we behave.
Yeah, interesting. I'd like to, maybe we can unpack that a little bit after the break and some other things. Certainly, we're talking with Dr. Linda Soli about her book, Take Charge of Your Emotions, 7 Steps to Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger.
I think one of the things I'm going to ask her after the break is which of those are most common that she sees in her practice, depression, anxiety, and anger.
Oh.
Just saying.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting. I'll be interested to hear the answer to that.
Okay.
Hey, you're listening to Real Life with Beth and Rob. Join us right after this break. It'll only be 60 seconds. We'll see you then.
See you in a minute.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. And we're hoping you're having a fabulous Saturday wherever you happen to be today.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We're having this great, interesting conversation with Dr. Linda Soli about her book, Take Charge of Your Emotions, 7 Steps for Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Okay. You probably heard me right before the break. I was going to ask you, of those 3 kind of challenging emotions, depression, anxiety, and anger, which do you find to be the most common in the patients that come to your office?
I probably see anxiety the most often. Depression, a very close second. Mm-hmm. And anger, not as often, but they can all go together so much, uh-huh. too. And often people who are anxious have secondary depression because they feel so hopeless that they don't know how they're going to get freedom from this anxiety.
Mm. You know, of the 7 steps, we haven't talked about them in total, but I know that one of them, unraveling, is particularly important, maybe a key to the others. Could you talk some about that?
Yes. Through counseling people who are depressed, anxious, and angry, I've noticed that they tell themselves general statements that are problematic, and they'll stop right there. Like a person might say, my life is boring, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, and stop right there. They mm-hmm. feel kind of depressed, and their behavior is passive. Or, I can't introduce myself to new people. They stop right there. They feel intimidated, and their behavior is don't introduce themselves to new people. Or, my boss drives me crazy. They feel resentful, mm-hmm. and they might sabotage their boss. I started saying because to challenge these general statements. People don't naturally challenge those statements, but saying because afterwards, I didn't plan it 2 minutes before it popped out of my mouth. So I never sat down to make up these 7 steps. They mm-hmm. naturally evolved in the counseling. And a person said, like, I can't handle having company over for dinner. If they say that, they'll feel intimidated and behavior, don't have company for dinner. But I just started saying because. Then they might say the meal might not turn out well because the meat might be dry and the vegetables overcooked. I discovered at a certain point saying because did not elicit very interesting information. If I said because after the meat will be too dry because I left it in the oven too long, that wouldn't be very interesting. And just out of my mouth popped another phrase, which is a problem because. Why is it a problem if the vegetables are overcooked or the meat's too dry? My guests will think I'm a bad cook, which is a problem because they may not respect me, which is a problem because they may no longer be my friend. I teach people how to unravel it until it becomes ridiculous or they're repeating themselves. When it becomes ridiculous, that propels people toward a helpful way of thinking. A person might say, I've never heard of friendships ending over dry meat served for dinner. And it boils down to pride, and having company over for dinner isn't about impressing my guests with my culinary skills. It's about spending time together. And that would be believable, what I would call helpful self-talk, instead of positive thinking of, my guests will love my meal and everything will be absolutely delicious. And then that leads to feeling more confident and behavior invite company over for dinner, which is the 7th step. Looking at what feelings and behaviors follow the helpful self-talk.
Right. And it would go without saying, I mean, what are the seven steps? We've talked around them, but yes. tell our listeners, what are those seven steps that you've discovered?
The first step is write the situation. What is happening? And to use this example that I've already said, it could be thinking about having company over for dinner. The second step is list the feelings that you have when you think about doing this. So this person might say, I feel insecure or intimidated. And I have a feelings list in the book, which helps people really precisely identify how they feel. And that is so key because a lot of our thinking is unchallenged and it is subconscious. And I want people to identify all of the unhelpful thoughts in their mind that are stopping them from finding the emotional relief that they want or stopping them from engaging in behaviors that would be productive and helpful in their lives. So second step is feelings. The third step is to unravel the problem thinking or to identify the unhelpful self-talk. People write one paragraph for each feeling word that they select, that they are experiencing, that it exposes the thinking that created that undesirable emotion. The fourth step is to look at what behavior follows from these unhelpful thoughts. So the person who's telling themselves that they can't have company over for dinner because their guests will think they're a bad cook, they may not respect me, they may no longer want to be my friend. For step four, the behavior would be don't invite company over for dinner. Step five is write the helpful self-talk that is true and believable, which in my example would be it boils down to pride. I'm having these people over so they can enjoy each other's company, not impress them with my culinary skills. And then step six would be what feelings follow from that, more confident. Sometimes the feelings are incrementally improved. It's not like a person goes from feeling insecure to super confident, but more confident. And then step seven is what is the behavior that would follow from that, which would be invite the company over for dinner. And people can really learn how to analyze themselves with these becauses and which is a problem because it surprises me. I can't read anyone's mind as a psychologist. And I am amazed. And people themselves don't naturally think with all these becauses and which is a problem because. And they are surprised, and I am surprised, with what comes from that. Every single issue that's revealed in the unhelpful self-talk has to be turned around in a true and believable way in the helpful self-talk.
Yeah. You know, for many years I was a therapist, and people would come into the office, and they would be scattered, and what they would need is something to hang their hat on. They would need a structure in order to work through some of that chaos. And your book and the steps that you've just mentioned are so helpful because they do provide that framework for people who are dealing with those things. So I couldn't recommend it more highly to our listeners that if you're looking for a framework that will help you sort of begin to deal with these things, you've laid them out beautifully in your book.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. And at the end of the book, I might add, I have a topical index of seven-step topics because it's hard for people when they are used to thinking in a way that creates depression or anxiety. I believe that people develop habitual ways of interpreting life. And for people who really want to find relief from depression or anxiety, it takes effort, but I recommend that people, once they learn how to write out the seven steps, to write them out once a day, at least 5 days a week, for a month to 6 weeks, until they're automatically interpreting life in a helpful way about 90% of the time. At the back of the book, they can look in the topical index to see all these different self-talk examples and see how to turn things around in a helpful way, to give them ideas, basic templates of how to think in a helpful way about a variety of different situations.
Right. Well, great. I know the book is published by Bethany House. Where can our listeners find it?
They can check out local bookstores, Christian bookstores, even Barnes & Noble's, or go to BethanyHouse.com, or it's on Amazon, on just about everywhere you could go on the internet to purchase books.
Take Charge of Your Emotions, Seven Steps to Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger. Dr. Linda Soley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yeah, it's been great to talk to you. Blessings
Thank
to you.
Blessings to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Interesting stuff. I mean, this is something that people deal with. Just, you don't have to go to a therapist. Every person at some time in their life, at some level, it may not be clinical or I need to be in a therapy session or whatever, but they're going to deal with depression, anxiety, and anger. Everybody.
So I was thinking as a parent, you know, I have a house full of small children and big children and
yes.
all kinds of children. And I was thinking, some of my listeners know that I recently relocated from a lifetime, it feels like, in Mexico to the United States. And one of the things that I cannot get over is the anxiety level of American children. How, whether you read it or see it, there's always helpful hints in the little school bulletins. Kids are struggling with anxiety.
It's crazy. You're right. I mean, it's just...
They're anxious about all kinds of things.
Yep.
And they're going to grow up to be anxious adults. So what kinds of things do you think, Dr. Hall, former therapist, what kinds of things do you think parents should and can do, employing this thinking about helpful thinking versus positive thinking and all that? Because as a parent, it's much easier to do positive thinking. It's all going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to think you look great. You're going to do great in your game, which that's not even really true.
That's right. You may not even play.
Right. So... how can a parent begin to employ helpful thinking tactics in order to reduce the anxiety their children are experiencing?
Well, I guess I'd back up one. Here I am sounding like the expert here.
I'm asking you. You are an expert.
I'd back up one by saying I think what perhaps Western culture, but certainly American culture, the kids that I interact with, they are exposed to things before they're ready to handle them.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's the news, whether it's the kind of clothes they should wear, whatever. How do you fit into culture? We expect 8-year-olds to think like 13-year-olds and 13-year-olds to think like 20-year-olds, and we expose them to news articles or decisions about sex or relationships or whatever far ahead, and they're unable to handle the nuances of that discussion. And so from the very beginning, the kinds of conversations and things that we're exposing kids to cause anxiety. They know they don't know the answers to these or how to handle these things, and yet we expect them to. We engage them in those kind of conversations. So inherent almost from the beginning is this, I'm always feeling anxious because people are wanting me to think and do things that I can't necessarily do. But in terms of helpful thinking, kids know the difference between a legitimate, sincere compliment and blowing smoke, right? So your example there, hey, you're going to do great. Well, the kid's like, listen, I've been trying to do this for 2 years, and I know I'm not going to do great. So let's go back to saying, instead of focusing on the outcome of what it'll be like, let's focus on, I'm really proud of your hard work. I'm really excited that you've had this opportunity. You know, do the very best you can in a particular situation. So instead of, you will do great, and then the pressure is, oh my gosh, I got to do great, or I know they're not telling me the truth, is sell them something true and right. You have a great opportunity. Isn't this great? Do the very best that you can. I'm glad that you've had an opportunity to do such and such. So off the top of my head.
Which is what I usually ask you questions for.
Right. Removing the expectation, like this will turn out a particular way, is to say, let's focus on the process of what we're doing and enjoy that process. And that's a more realistic conversation. So that's what
Thank
comes
you,
to
Dr.
mind.
Thank you, Dr. Hall.
There
I
you
think
go.
That's great because I think that that's a really practical way that we can take some of Dr. Linda's teaching and bring it into our everyday dinner table.
Yeah, I know we only have a minute left. The thing it reminded me of was when we had Dave Ping on from Equipping Ministries International. It's been probably 18 months ago. Go to EMI.com, Equipping Ministries. They have a great training on how to put these things really into practice. So, anyway, we're out of time.
Oh,
man, I wish we had more time. Anyway, this has been Real Life with Beth and Rob.
And I hope you have heard conversations today that will inspire you.
Absolutely, and we're going to do it again next Saturday. So join us then. Until then, have a great week.